Hey, Kitchen Stewardship. So excited to be talking with Kresha from Nourishing Joy today. She is another real food mom, just living life, trying to get through day to day, feeding her kids, and has some awesome expertise on picky eaters in particular. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. Thank you so much for joining us from apparently around the world.
Yeah.
Well, around the other side of the US, actually, Kresha and I. But let's start a little bit with your story, because I don't know if my readers will be real familiar with you. What brought you to real food for your family?
Well, kind of a lot of things. Obviously health. That's certainly why we stay with it. But it was probably about, I think it's almost been about 10 years ago now. It must have been because our daughter was 6 months old, when there was kind of a catalyst. We were living in very urban Mecca city, millions of people, and we were living in a very urban area in an apartment building. And it was kind of this crazy, it was springtime, or the city was surrounded by mountains, and there was all this snow runoff. And all of a sudden we got, the whole city got a water advisory that we could no longer drink the water because all the snow was, you know, overwhelming the water supply and was no longer clean. At the same time, the heat in our building went off and all these things. And here we had this 6-month-old baby. And it was one of those things where, and I'd been having trouble breastfeeding. And just that week we had kind of moved her onto some formula, which I hadn't wanted to do. And, you know, all of that. So we're in that place. And all of a sudden all these things happen. And we realize we have no way to feed our baby, keep her warm, and we just felt so disconnected from what was real, you know. And we both had grown up in families where, you know, a lot of gardening and self-sustainability and, you know, kind of all those things. So it wasn't foreign to us in any way, but just being in that, we hadn't really been doing it ourselves in our married life yet. And, you know, it was just, we hadn't really thought about it. And it was just kind of a catalyst for starting a conversation that, you know, as catalysts do, they just, that conversation kept rolling, and as life changed, we just made more and more a priority of making sure that we were feeding ourselves and our growing family real healthy food. A lot of it is centered around traditional foods, you know. And so it was, and it felt alive and exciting. And my husband has had severe eczema for a number of years. His eczema started clearing up, and, you know, we just started seeing all these different things. Left his career in medical research to become an organic farmer. And, you know, it was just kind of as life traveled on its journey, that just became a very important part to us. It certainly also was that we wanted to be very intentional, not with what we were feeding just our own family, mm-hmm. but what systems we were paying into and where our food came from and, you know, all of those big questions. And all of that has certainly was our catalyst, as well as what has kept us kind of excited along on the road, and why we continue to make a point to cook from scratch and buy quality ingredients and, you know, all of those things. So,
yeah. Oh my gosh. I have never apparently heard your story. I've been friends with you and read your blog off and on for years. And I'm listening to you going, really? Like, there was this crisis of water? I had no idea. So that's a fascinating story that you had, like basically a week or whatever, that was a total crisis where it sounds like you just felt helpless, but then a slow build. And really, I think one thing I love about you and your blog is that your values are very much entrenched in being a good steward of the world, which makes sense why we get along so well. So that's so cool.
So true.
So now, catch up my audience on how many kids you have now and their ages.
Okay, we've got 3 kids. Our oldest, a girl, is 10, and then we have 2 boys who are 6 and 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so plenty busy enough household.
Yeah.
And now, how about picky eating? What draws you to that as a passion?
Well, because it causes stress, and I'm all about reducing stress points. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think just because I hear it talked about so much, and especially with parents who want to be, who are either wanting to switch to real food or who are already there and are finding it difficult to make meals when people are tired and hungry and complaining, and, you know, it kind of happens day after day after day, and kids are being picky, and or husbands or wives are being picky about the food that's on the table. And I just find that it's a common stress point. And So to me, that means no, that means we need to address it, whether that's on a family basis or a societal basis or whatever. But it certainly drives me to have it as part of the conversation, because let's get rid of those stress points if we possibly can and be at a place of rest in our lives.
Oh, so. I love that. And it is kind of an epidemic, and that's where we got to start our talk here, is that I hear a lot of parents say, oh, like so-and-so's a picky eater, or I have a picky eater. And sometimes based on what I see of that eater and trying something new right in front of me or whatever, I might disagree with their assessment of their own children. So let's define what is a picky eater.
That's a great question, because I very much agree with you. Certainly there are times when kids go through, you know, especially in toddlerhood and preschoolhood, you know, through that, those first 5 years, it is absolutely totally normal for kids to go through phases where they, you know, their favorite food suddenly is a food they won't touch, you know, and that can
go cheese for us this month. My 2-year-old suddenly like says, I don't like cheese. And I'm like, since when? Like since last week, literally. Oh my gosh, so frustrating. Is he a picky eater? No, he's a stubborn toddler.
Exactly. Well, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, because picky eaters, I would define as those who are very reticent to try anything new. That said, that doesn't categorize those who are trying to figure out the world, because I think a lot of picky eating actually doesn't have to do with the food. Especially as we get into elementary age kids and slightly older, a lot of it, I find, has to do with life, you know, and food is a place where they can have control. Whether, obviously, most of the time they don't realize that's what's happening. But we then, I think, I mean, I hear kind of across the board, there's an assumption that kids will be picky. And therefore, we kind of just have to grin and bear it, and that's what we're supposed to do. Whereas, and so therefore, like you, I commonly hear people, you know, we'll be at a church potluck or something, and just hearing a parent saying, oh, you won't like that, don't try that. Or, you know, just those little things that we assume less of our children.
Sure. We feed into it, unintended.
Unintended most of the time, absolutely. But I also think that, you know, a lot of kids, you know, especially when they're coming into those ages where, you know, they've got big emotions and big thoughts and the world is big, and there's, you know, maybe they're starting school or they've been in school and there's all these, you know, just relationships, and, you know, life is big and hectic. And as either a way to try to simplify that complicated world or as a way to exercise control over some part of the world, I think that often comes down to the food, on saying, I have control over this, because you can't force it down my throat. So,
right.
Therefore,
because otherwise, kids are told what to do all day.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. And also, when, you know, body's pHs are changing and behaviors and psychological things are changing, you know, obviously, it is okay that tastes change and all of that sort of thing. So I think with those layers, I find that it really, when we take the emphasis off the food, we can deal with a lot, you know, 90% of what's going on. I just find that when we can focus more on the family meal, the family table, than on the food itself, we can have some real strategies to deal with that picky eating. It takes months, weeks, years, whatever, but it just changes the whole dynamic. Because I really do feel like that a lot of that pickiness comes from those other parts of life that and happen around the food, but they aren't actually most of the time about the food itself.
Sure. Okay. So if some of the causes are external and outside of the food, then are some of the cures per se also outside food, or do we focus on the food? Like, what are some strategies to get started on?
I would say both. Because you can do things like, if you want to deal with the food itself, you certainly can. Like, for example, I mean, you had the cheese example. You know, one of ours has been tomatoes. You know, our 4-year-old, when he was in his story, last summer, he like we have this, we're in the process of starting a new farm. And so we have this market garden behind our house, and he adores going out and growing the tomatoes and picking the tomatoes and caring for them and everything. They, you know, just, he loves tomatoes. But all of a sudden he decided he no longer liked eating tomatoes. It was just like, what came over you? But one night, because of our, when in our homeschool, we were studying monks and kind of the beginning early monasteries and things like that. And so we were having a meal that we were pretending was in this dark monastery in the 4th century. And, so of course we were eating by candlelight. And unbeknownst to him, he ate tomatoes in 3 different forms. You know, he was,
couldn't see them
for more. And so just meaning that sometimes when we change the situation, it changes the mind, you know, whether it's, I run a meal planning service and I always include a family activity for the month in the meal plan as well. And a lot of the times it is for those, you know, sorts of changing things up, like, you know, eat dinner under the table one night, you know, or a picnic in the living room or things like that, where those, you can introduce those foods again often in, if when the situation is different and the expectations mentally on within the child's own mind is different. And you can start having, introducing things back in that way. Again, with food though, you know, you can also just any other way that makes it fun. I mean, anything you eat with a toothpick or a skewer is going to be more fun. You know?
Sure. Yeah, I should do that with cheese.
You know, yeah. You know, so, I mean, there are just those ways to kind of make the food itself. But in terms of a larger perspective, I think also just having, you know, if the child is feeling anxious in a certain way, you know, when they're around a family table, often that's a way to help them feel more secure, because you know when you're sharing a meal, you're telling stories, you're laughing together, you're just sharing time and space, and everybody contributes. And
is that what family dinner is supposed to be like? Oh, I thought it was parents jumping up to constantly get more.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I have a 2-year-old still, and you don't have kids quite that young.
Oh yeah, but yeah, it's all those different stages, though. It's amazing. But yeah, just that whole, you know, children can feel valued because they're part of, you know, they're part of that, the fabric of the family, and their contributions, you know, the jokes that make no sense whatsoever are still valued and laughed at, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it also gives a safe place to lay those groundworks for the rules that you do want around food. For example, in our family, we have 2 rules. One, you do have to take a bite of everything at each time it's presented, you know, every meal. Even if you decide you still don't like it, you still have to take one bite, because, you know, after the 40th time, usually it comes back, you know, or, you know, I throw that number out as a random, but
right. But eventually, you know, yeah.
Yeah. But then also because it gives value to, they still can choose. They don't like it. That's their decision, but it doesn't mean that you get to decide. You know, you still have to try it. It's
the value. Have you ever had the battle of the bite, where the child like literally just says no and would sit there until 10 p.m. with that bite on their fork?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Where does the bite go? What do you do?
Yeah. Well, we've been in that place. And it's one of those things where I think, again, it has to come down to a couple of things. Well, let me go back, actually, because it'll help me circle back around.
Sure.
Because I think the other rule we have in our family is depending on whether food is served to you or whether you took it. Because, you know, a lot of us grew up with that, you know, you must eat everything on your plate. And right now, there's a very much a societal mindset that's saying, no, don't tell kids that, because, you know, that's why we've got obese kids, and, you know, which is valid. But I find that I want both of those lessons taught. I want my children to know portion control, know their own bodies, can able to be listened to them, but at the same time that they are mindful of what they're putting on their plate, because we do have massive food waste issues around us. Not that they need to know about the food waste issue, but I want them to just, you know, come back to stewardship. We don't waste. Yes. We're mindful of what we do. So we also have the rule that if a food is served to you, you're allowed to negotiate on how many bites. And sometimes we even will say, well, how old are you? Then you need to eat that many bites, and then you can, you know. So if it's served to you, you may negotiate. But if you served it to yourself, then you must eat all of it. Mm-hmm. And generally, that has, because there is a place where they are allowed to choose, and a place when they're not allowed to choose what, you know, whether they have to finish the bite per se. We find, I can remember only twice in all of our child-rearing years where that battle has gone on for more than a minute or two, because we've allowed that where to feel like they can have some control over things, yeah. But at the same time to say, nope, sorry, you know the rules, this is what you chose. I mean, I'm of the mind that it's okay to let them absolutely sit there until they fall asleep and we make sure they're not choking, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Other people may disagree with me on that. And I think in some ways that's a whole other issue. Because again, it's not about the food at that point. It's a control battle.
Totally.
At that point. But we find that we've been able to mitigate those. You know, when you see a child getting into that control battle, you know, you can see it coming in the eyes. Mm-hmm. But if we can mitigate it so we don't get to that standoff.
Give them some sort of choice.
Give them a choice on something else so that they're not leaving the table having triumphed, you know, that I get to make the rules and everybody else has to listen to what I say. But at the same time, giving them feeling like they had control over something and what was still within the family rules. So, you know, whether it was choosing, okay, well, you don't have to eat the one bite of that, but you choose a bite of something else, you know, or, you know, little things like that, that again, trying to take the emphasis off the food while still the medium of the conversation.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes total sense. I even wonder if they had more choices throughout the day, like, okay, we're setting the table. Do you want to be in charge of spoons or forks, or we're, we're going outside, do you want to wear your boots or your shoes? It's not that slushy out or whatever. So I think that's a good strategy for parents, just to remember that, you know, their kids do want to feel that all day. They don't want to go through the day feeling like they're a pawn or feeling like they lose every power struggle, because then they're going to turn it on.
Well, and that their opinion is as valued, or they're, yeah, they have control over something. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting.
You know, and one other thing, though, I think is absolutely vital. It, like, you just, and that helps both in a specific moment, a specific meal, but it's also giving kids a skill that helps them. I mean, we're in the business of helping our children delight in their food, and delight in the family relationships, even when every single meal is chaotic. You know, yeah. I mean, when I think of our meals and just the chaos that often ensues, and yet would we change that for a second? The fact that that's a time when everybody comes together and we're talking about our crazy days and we're, you know, established. I mean, it's a rhythm that everybody loves and expects. And
yes, they want to eat together.
Yeah.
You know, at least, I mean, I don't know. I don't have teenagers yet. We might have people trying to, can I shake my plate to my room? I don't know. But we're not there yet. You know, right now it's, eat with us, you know, eat lunch with us. Can you eat breakfast with us? Sit down, you know, quit making lunches or whatever.
Yeah.
They definitely love that. Do you think, now, I mean, you and I think we've had some of this right from the beginning of our children's lives, mm-hmm. but I know not every parent has, you know, some parents have kids who eat 5 foods and that's all they'll eat, or 10 foods or whatever. Are there different strategies to use for different types of picky eaters, or different mm-hmm. kind of places, relationships between parents and kids?
You know, that's a great question. I would say yes, absolutely. Partially because, you know, again, if you're, you know, making your child feel valued, you know, I think it's fairly easy, especially if it's been going on for months or years, to find yourself very subconsciously sort of belittling your child for, you know, why won't you eat more? Why, you know, you're not good enough because you only eat these 5 foods. And I say that, I mean, that's kind of a harsh statement, but what I mean by that is, I think it's easy to get to that place when it's been a long time, a long period. But knowing your child and valuing them for that helps them get help on that journey. You know, because, I mean, ultimately, in some ways, this is a life skill. How do you conquer something that is hard? How do you learn to do something you don't like to do? Those are life skills. And so if we can model for our children, you know, if we can have great patience with them, as well as infuse that journey with creativity and patience and joy, then we can help them learn that life skill of conquering something new and being willing to be adventurous and trying something. But at the same time, being immensely patient with them as they learn that. And I think a lot of that is tailoring it to them. You know, if you know that your child does not like soft foods, you know, I've met a lot
of kids.
Mushy
things.
You know, it's a sensory thing. It's not a flavor thing. It's a sensory thing. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, maybe plan a meal around, you know, take it to a different sense. Plan a meal that's all red foods, and include
all crunchy foods,
or all crunchy foods, or all something. And so either that they're feeling very triumphant because they ate everything on their plate, or use it as a way to kind of move in some of those things that they're not terribly excited about because it's part of a different theme, you know, something like that. Or even, you know, make a very, very small goal that you know your child can meet,
right,
so that they can feel confident in moving forward. And if that means sticker charts and, you know, all that kind of stuff, then, you know, you do whatever you want to do and works for you. But I think a lot of it does have to do with giving the child that excitement that and talking with them about, especially if they're of elementary age and upper elementary age, talking with them, saying, you know, why is this? Or tell me some foods that you do like. You know, I know you love Daddy's omelets when he makes omelets. What do you think about the omelets? Do you think we could try this? And, you know, as you're talking about nutrition, as you're teaching them knife skills, as you're teaching them, you know, all these things, those are wonderful ways to help them learn those skills and be willing to and excited even to try, maybe. Hopefully the reticence doesn't last for years and years and years.
Right. Well, I think you just said something that struck me in that you have to try. I think that a lot of parents do just, it's so much easier to just give the kids the foods that they like. Mm-hmm. But we really do owe it to our kids to teach them how to do things that are hard. And we do that by modeling doing things that are hard, like being intentional about helping our picky eaters. I mean, that's us doing the right thing, you know? And I think once people start thinking about being creative, I mean, eating under the table, like that's so out of the box. You would surprise your children so much. They would probably eat just about anything, you know, you had in front of them, or a candlelight dinner with a storybook that's distracting them even more, right? From noticing the green things on their plate. I'm like, because we ate by candlelight a lot during Advent, and I thought, we did have fewer complaints. And it's probably because they couldn't even see what they were eating. That's brilliant.
And well, even, I mean, it uses a whole tone too, but anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, it totally does. And I think having fun with food too, like if you have a crunchy potato chip lover, you could have potato chips and pea pods or something and say, let's like do blindfolds and decide like which one's crunchier,
oh, that's
you know,
how,
what are the, what's the difference in the way these crunch or whatever. It would just be fun. And I think, I mean, we don't need to trick people into anything, but definitely just, we need to trick our minds even as adults. Yeah. Like I can't tell myself, well, you know what? I've been a procrastinator my whole life and I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'm just not, right. I'm done procrastinating. Like whatever. I would need a plan and so many ways to trick myself. It wouldn't even be funny. So you know, we got to understand that our kids are human beings too. And they need, they need help. They need us to help them for sure. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it can be difficult too, because that, requires in some ways, it's very intentional on our part. It requires our creativity and our energy. And I know for me, I can have great intentions for what I want to do with my children, but at the end of the day, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I'm at the end of my emotional rope. And so, you know, that takes some thinking ahead as well, because it's hard to do those things on the fly. Like, if I'm one of the ones who, I mean, I love the idea of sitting under the table and eating, but how often do I do it? Almost never, because, you know, because it takes energy and thought on my part. And if we're going to do that, I have to plan it days in advance to make sure that we've got the right food. So I'm not scrambling around the whole time looking for, do we have this? Oh, I forgot to put that out. And, you know, like,
yes,
in order to have the effect that I want it to have, it takes my energy. So in some ways we have to be careful about how many of those things we choose to, just that we're not burning ourselves out as we're helping our children. No matter how much we long for it.
Right. Yeah. We definitely can't do it all at once. And sometimes, I mean, I feel like sometimes just getting the people fed anything is like a Herculean task. Yes, I have made it. They have eaten today. They have all eaten all the times. Yep. I'm good. Like, that's all I can do to get through the day. Like, forget about making homemade desserts or, you know, like non-essentials, like whatever. So do you have any strategies to help give parents a little bit of extra bandwidth, just in like just general getting food on the table strategies that we can use?
Yeah, I talk about these a lot in my meal plans because I call them the three P's, planning, prep, and pantry. So planning is meal planning. I mean, bar none, there is nothing for your sanity or your money, your pocketbook that is better than meal planning. There's a gazillion ways to do it. I don't care how, but just whatever works for you, just planning meals ahead, makes a massive difference. And in psychologically, if nothing else, you know, I used to hate meal planning, hate it. Because I felt like it would constrain me, and I like to, you know, I like to cook by mood. You know, right now it's frigidly cold and snowy, and so, you know, I want to eat stew. You know, like, it's a mood thing. But what I found was that once I did start meal planning, restriction. Yeah. So I therefore didn't have to spend the mental energy wondering what we were going to eat. But if I did a mood struck, I could still change the plan. No big deal, you know, and I already either prepped or had on hand all the ingredients for that for another meal, you know, win-win. So meal planning, definitely. So that's planning, prepping. This I learned when I was working in French restaurants and, you know, the restaurant industry. I learned so much because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're at a restaurant and you order something, the chefs aren't back there chopping the onions and getting everything ready when you order it. All of that has been done hours before. They have everything at the ready so that whenever you order your dish, they can just grab everything and put it together and you have your fresh meal. And so that's what I've based my meal plans on. And whether or not it's my meal plans or the way you do it, I just totally recommend looking ahead at any recipe, you know, anything that you've planned, and look through it and say, hey, what can I do ahead? Can I chop the onions? Can I put together a spice mix? Can I even just pull all the ingredients I need for the front of the fridge so I'm not digging around for stuff?
Sure. So anything to kind of preserve that, like, post 5 p.m. time when you're starting to run out of reserves. Yeah.
Yep. All that needs to be happening then is the final cooking, or the, in the case of a slow cooker meal or an instant pot meal, something serving up.
Exactly. You know, like,
'cause that's all we have bandwidth for at that point. And then pantry, just keeping on hand the snacks and the ingredients that you're happy serving. You know, if you love potato chips like I do, and you know that you would eat every bag in the house, or that your kids would eat every bag in the house, and you don't want that, well, don't bring it in the house. You know, just have on hand the things that you are happy people snacking on, or that you're happy cooking with. And I find that those three things, if, you know, when I'm on top of those three things, I can keep my sanity, and I can have meals, whether they're last minute meals or they're prepared ahead meals, freezer meals, you know, those kinds of things, that can all, that's my best long-term strategy for anybody.
Okay, that's awesome. So we're going to be intentional about what we do with our kids. We're going to switch things up to kind of give a little mental jolt. We're going to turn the lights off so they can't see what they're eating. No, not really, but candlelight. That's going to be my thing all through the winter now because it's dark here at dinner. And then your three P's. You got to plan prepping ahead. It's like a little gift to yourself. Both of those are. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say have a well-stocked pantry, and you're like, and you said don't have temptations in your pantry, which is good advice. But yes, yeah, don't.
Well, well-stocked is good too, especially when you get snowed in. But
exactly, or like your crisis when you couldn't drink the water and
yeah,
whatever. It's so interesting. I do find that all those things make a big difference. I'm going to make sure that in the post and the YouTube where this video is, we'll make sure that we have links to nourishingjoy.com and your meal planner and kidscookrealfood.com. That's our course to teach kids to cook. So it all kind of comes together in this beautiful symbiosis of survival. Because that's really what we're all about as moms, isn't it? We're going to survive. Well, hopefully we'll raise independent adults who will thrive. But today, it's survival.
Yep.
So, oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Kresha, for this great insight. And you've honestly given me some good ideas for my little new cheese hater. I know it happens with every kid between 2 and 5. They're picky.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a 5-year-old, too. And he's literally, like, one is climbing into the pit and he's climbing out. He was the other day. He goes, I kind of liked that piece of broccoli. I was like, what? And I mean, literally this kid has been like, can I skip the broccoli? Can I skip the broccoli? Like, I see there's broccoli in this meal. I don't want to eat the broccoli. Yep. And we don't have quite as hard a fiesta rule as you do. I like that you have 2 rules too. It's very simple. You must take a bite of everything every time. And if you serve it, you've made your choice and you finish it. I really like that a lot. Oh, such good stuff, Kresha. I can't wait to hear people's reactions and other tips and other stories of picky eating. So it's got to be the time in our culture with a picky eating revolution that we just can't accept it. We can't accept that kids will choose to eat only unhealthy foods, really. Like, you can not like things, but you have to eat something healthy. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
It's on along the way. Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you for being a cheerleader with me today, and have a lovely stew-filled, warm, cozy afternoon.
Indeed.
Thanks, Kresha.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Katie.